relate to all these different experiences you have and down the highs and lows in your life, and how they can actually with this different attitude to actually help us to navigate through all these different challenges and find happiness. Regardless of whether we are experiencing pleasure or pain, to find happiness, whether we gain or we lost something. So that's what I'm planning for this talk. And the happiness I'm focusing on is what I call conditioning happiness. Which is a good thing to have. You know, sometimes if I write high standards, it's like another unconditional one. So, that's the conditional one first. Then you can aim for the unconditional. Unconditional happiness, unconditional peace. Yeah. So, now that I touch on a little bit on those different items, but today I want to focus on the first pair, pleasure and pain. Right? And usually with all these different pairs of experiences, it is our reaction to them that is the source of our difficulty. How we react to them. Pleasure by itself is pleasure. Right? You have something pleasant, pleasant experience. For example, if you like doing the store just outside the center, I think that there's a lot of flavors and joy all for us. Someone doesn't have a fruit and durian. So for a lot of Singaporeans, that is a pleasant experience. Right? And so now and then, someone is going to get yourself sick eating too much durian, then it's something nice for them. Right? The funny thing about durian is that many years ago when I was studying Italy, then I decided I'll just buy this. I think they call it durian cake, this thing. Actually, it doesn't taste anything like the real one. But it has some of the smell. I took it back to Italy and shared among my classmates. I was not really shared, but I know they were going to have an adverse reaction to it. Just for fun. Just something memorable from Southeast Asia. And soon after, there has been some pleasant experience with that. If you taste it, it's valid. So it goes to show pleasure and pain probably doesn't reside within durian. It actually resides within us, how we are accustomed to and how we relate to that object. Within it. For some people, it's great pleasure. For other people, it's like, whoa, it's just take this far away from me. I can't stand the smell of it and cannot even imagine putting it in my mouth. But on by itself, pleasure is just pleasure, and pain is just pain. But because the greater suffering comes in how we react to them. So, for example, with pleasure, the reaction that we talk a lot about in Buddhism is attachment. We become attached to those pleasures. And our attachment usually complicates things. Pleasure by itself, like durian, I enjoy durian, I have it, and then I forget about it. So there's no issue there. But if something is on the get attached to durian, and I don't really like durian, but so I can use it as an example. It's very unlikely I develop attachment to durian. But if you get attached to something, the attachment, which is a kind of reaction to what you perceive as pleasant, it takes the picture. It is known as a durian cake. It is the most terrible thing in the world. Which, for a lot of other people, is that. Why are you? That's how suffering is. Self-generated, self-created. But for the person who is experiencing this withdrawal from not having experience in this season, it's a real suffering, isn't it? But where does that suffering reside? The suffering doesn't reside in durian. It resides in of attachment to durian. Really wanting to have it, craving for it, and perceiving that if only I can have it, then I will be happy. And so that's what I mean by reaction. Because that kind of thing is not that. Okay. Attachment to aircon. I really don't like the heat. Yeah. So the attachment to pleasure is usually the source of suffering. Right? Only about the pleasure itself. Not so much the pleasure, but the attachment to the pleasure. I think it's more obvious in relation to people. If you can see someone for their happiness, and you have a lot of pleasant memories, pleasant experiences with this person, then this person will be every day. Not with us, because we travel somewhere, then we miss them. Then our attachment to that person creates something. But there are also other friendship or relationship where we enjoy meeting one another, but we don't have much attachment. So at the end of the day, we say bye-bye, and then we get on with our life, and there is no complication. It's kind of a much more clear-cut, clean, simpler relationship. So attachment complicates our relationship with pleasure, and that one is pain, because aversion complicates or compounds our suffering. Pain is not about pleasure. Great pain is an unpleasant sensation, unpleasant experience, because we don't like it. I'm not trying to convince you to like pain, but what happens is we react to pain, we react to unpleasant experiences, quite often with aversion. We experience this, or I observe this a lot in meditation, even medicine. So let's say we take a meditation course, we want to stop thinking, the famous stop thinking. Your thinking was the one that you feel is agitating our mind and body. So we correctly identify it is our compulsive thinking that is the source of problems. Usually we come to something called meditation, thinking that maybe you will be able to have a calm, quiet, peaceful meditation with no thinking, which is totally unrealistic. Yeah. And so within the meditation itself, you are thinking didn't stop. In fact, when you get more thinking, think about more thinking, because now you are not distracting yourself. You're watching this boring breath moving in and out. So of course, the thinking starts to proliferate. Over this, so a more thought, you become more aware. And that is contradictory to what you expect and who you want. So you develop aversion to that experience of thinking, which tends to. Thinking is just thinking. If you don't reject it, you just mind going blah, 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 blah. You do that all day long, anyway. But within the meditation setting, because you really dislike it. You really reject it. And so there's a strong aversion, which can translate in the form of manifesting kind of frustration, really very frustrating. You get very angry, you get angry at yourself, you get whatever. And that makes the whole meditative experience so much more unpleasant. Already there is this thing of thinking, which is, can be a little bit annoying, but because it becomes annoying. It's something that you really want to get rid of, and you can't, you fail to get rid of it. Then you have this strong aversion. So that aversion makes the whole unpleasant experience even more unpleasant. So a mature meditator, in my definition, is not so much someone that has no thinking, but are quite okay with thinking. They are quite able to acknowledge that maybe a certain day, certain session, they have been quite a lot more thought. The mind has a lot more agitation, the mind reacts to what's going on in life. That moment is more thought, and then you observe it, you are aware of it, and you think, okay. It's one of those days and one of those sessions where I was just still, my mind is just still happening on me. And it's not the end of the world. And you don't actually even feel aversion for it, you just as I go, you do your best to come back to support your breath, let's say. And the fact that you don't reject it, you don't have aversion to it, actually means that you quite like it. Within that session, maybe a bit later, you feel a bit longer. The later kind of session, suddenly, all this chatting stops. It's like the mind runs out of steam. There's no one to fight against, you just sort of get bored with monologuing, like me and you talk your talk, and you just decided that, right, you know, let's stop talking. And then suddenly you realize you have this experience. It happens to me quite often that the later part of the meeting, maybe even the last 5 minutes of the meeting, it's quite difficult. And then it's like, much less thinking, much more present, much more time attention is good, if we ask our driver to stop in meditation during the way, then it's not a problem. Then, when you arrive at this stage, meditation is no longer frustrating, it is no longer discouraging. Even the meditation session that I saw that we do for free is not perceived as something bad or wrong or terrible. You don't have that kind of reaction. And so therefore, the very to achieve what I try to recommend is any meditation session. It's a great session. Regardless of whatever happens during the session. You're going to perceive it, acknowledge it, relate to it, it's something you do. You always learn something. You learn something in your level of thinking, you learn something about what is. I'm so concerned about why is my mind or something. Keep going back to that. When you fall asleep, you really become more aware, maybe how tired you are, how exhausted you are really, maybe how sleep deprived you are. So that gives you something, tell you something about passing. So what we're going to look at today is how to address the reaction. The reaction to pleasure and pain. And when we are able to overcome this perpetuated reaction of attachment and aversion, and replace it with something different. You might find that actually we are reasonably happy when we are feeling pleasant activity, and we are not too unhappy even when we are encounter pain or unpleasant activity. And that contributes to our overall our sense of happiness. So let's start with pleasure. Quite often in Buddhist circle, you will hear people say, oh, I don't enjoy this. I will be attached to it. Quite often with meditation, I'm very interested in meditation. I talk a lot about it. Meditation is very good. But I can't meditate. What happens if I develop grace in meditation? And then I become attached to the grace of meditation. So I cannot meditate. I say, wow, you really thought? Think ahead, hey, no. You haven't even started and you worry about experiencing bliss in your meditation. So much bliss that you will become attached to it. But that's very good. Why don't you take it one step at a time? Don't worry about the bliss. Maybe you haven't experienced any of it for a long time. This is not a problem, isn't it? Yeah. But that kind of attitude is quite common. You know? That people sort of, instead of working on the attachment, you know, they work on the pleasure. They say, oh, in order to not attach, you must not have the pleasure. Which I thought was a real bummer. The whole point of becoming more enlightened is to live a happier life. You hope to have more pleasant experiences. And here you are denying yourself pleasant experiences because you are affected. You become attached to them. Unfortunately, the bad news is even if you don't have it, you still have attachment. It's not as if like I never experienced anything pleasant, then I will not have attachment. The deep attachment is still very much in the mind. It's very clean. So there is this funny thing about how in the past I heard the Buddha said, the Buddhist monks and nuns, they try to live a simple lifestyle, so they have very little material possessions. One of the most important the much bigger than this. It's what we call alms bowl, right? One where you collect food in. An alms bowl, this is the only bowl you have. You only allow one. You're not supposed to carry three or four. You walk around and say, oh, this for breakfast, this for lunch, this for dinner, this for supper. You only have one, right? It's a prized possession. No, if you smash it, then it goes to your nails. Until you manage to bag for another alms bowl. People can develop tremendous attachment to the arms and the arms. It comes to different design, generally, especially in Thailand, some look nicer than others, some look more stylish. Then you'll find that it's very natural, almost human, to say, oh, I hope they give me that nice thing, I want the ugly one. Otherwise, I just walk around. So year by year, carrying the ugly bowl doesn't look stylish at all. That's how powerful our attachment is. Even when you have very little possessions, very little source of pleasure, you can still become Krishna. So what I'm trying to say is avoidance of pleasure is not a good way of overcoming attachment, of craving, as a reaction. It is good news that you need to live. I give myself permission to enjoy pleasure. Whether I become a pleasure or not, that is a different question. But there that one of us, no need to deprive myself of pleasures in life. Which I think is true. Okay? If you don't remember anything at all tonight, just remember this thing. It's to your advantage. But the truth is that even as we enjoy pleasures, our attachment quite often distorts the enjoyment and even deprives us of the enjoyment. For example, in meditation, they try very hard to be a good meditator, and then they go, hey, something wonderful is happening in your meditation. not because it's a good idea. Especially, let's say, some people will suffer from type 2 diabetes. This is actually very common. I used to work in aged care. And they refuse to change their behavior. They have very serious diabetes. The blood sugar level is not under control. But they insist they must use their type 2 diabetes. Why is it not disease? If I don't have the oil, the salt, the sugar, the carbs, it's a major thing that midwives really feel extremely. That, I remember a long time ago when my dad was around, in the nursing home, one of his neighbors, a fellow resident, I think it's diabetes, but anyway, he has kidney failure. So he has to do dialysis, daily dialysis, this particular type, the one with the water. And our dear uncle, otherwise he's perfectly fine. He was dead, but no one at home can help him with the dialysis, or maybe the home environment is too dirty. He's not suitable for dialysis, so he moved in. And so that the assistant and nurse can help him with the daily dialysis. Our dear uncle never eat anything in the nursing home. Every day, shut himself out of the nursing home, walk down to the coffee shop, and eat whatever it is at the coffee shop. If I'm quite sure it's no good for his diabetes, definitely it's no good for his dialysis. Right? But we often do that. Because why? We feel that that is the source of pleasure, that is the source of happiness. Right? And if I'm deprived of it, that is not meaningful. Right? So in those cases, we do not see the danger of pursuing that particular pleasure, or the drawback of pursuing that particular pleasure, or the drawback, more is to do with the drawback of being attached to that pleasure. Not so much the pleasure is about being attached, if they're attached to a particular type of food. You insist that I must use it, even though everyone around you has been advising you not to do it. It's not healthy, it's not helpful. So that is, so first we acknowledge the justification, then we must also be aware of the danger of the drawback. And the third is the Buddha said, what is the escape? The escape of the way out is not to get rid of the pleasure. There's actually nothing much to do with the pleasure itself. The escape is to let go of the attachment and the craving to the pleasure. So that is the Buddha's three steps. Component of working with attachment. So this, I mentioned this, we're going to look at another method. I mentioned this because quite often people only focus on the one in the middle. They try to convince themselves and others that this is bad, this is bad, this is bad. Usually that doesn't work very well. First of all, we need to acknowledge that there is actually something that is present, very present, associated with it. And then the other part is you need to identify what exactly we are trying to get rid of. We're not trying to get rid of the pleasure, we're trying to get rid of the attachment to the pleasure. It is the attachment to craving that the source of pleasure. But I have a much easier way to put it. It's a difficult way. I have to convince myself this is bad. I'm very lazy, so I choose the path of least resistance. So there is another way in which you can help us to overcome our attachment, and that is, imagine you experience pleasure of this level. And along comes a different kind of pleasure. And then when you experience this some higher quality of pleasure, then you look back and say, this time the one that I used to enjoy, so low quality. Not interesting. I prefer that. Better quality. And later you can't think of even better. Wow, this is really good. So what? By then, how do you regard the very good person? I'm very not attached to it. If I have it, it's fine. If I don't have it, it's okay. Or this one, because this third level is so much better. You know what I'm trying to say? Because when we diversify, we have different experiences of happiness, different experiences of pleasure. That is less likely for the mind to fixate on one thing. But if you don't put your eggs in one basket, Then you could see that there are more options, there are more possibilities. It's all the experience market. You really hold on to that market very tightly, isn't it? If anything to happen to it, there goes your happiness. So in Buddhist presentation, there's this list of four different kinds of happiness. First part of happiness is happiness essential. This is what we are eating durian belongs to. Happiness essential. Like now, hey, maybe even the stomach is durian. You find happiness. Not durian, but okay. So that's not essential. Essential pressures are characterized by dependent on object. The object, the sense object, to stimulate the pleasure. If you don't have durian, thinking about imagining durian and actually eating it is two very different things, isn't it? You imagine you remember, it's nice, but we don't give you the same pleasure as we really eating it. So the central pleasure depends on the object, what to do with the object. So you don't have the object, it's very hard to have that pleasure experience. The second level of happiness is what the world will disagree. The Buddha said it's the happiness of blamelessness. Blamelessness, sort of a strange translation, it actually means that you live very a life that for you feel the free of blame, free from blame. That means you are able to live your life in line with your own ethical principles. So maybe then you look back, you feel happy. So you have really lived and took out a good life. And you feel no regret, you don't feel remorse, and you feel now of it comes from happiness and pleasure, which is sometimes very hard for people to relate to. So I was thinking about this and I think maybe in a modern day setting, instead of saying just ethics itself, people are downer, a lot of people don't like to think about it. Actually, you can think of it as the happiness of living in any season. Life that is very meaningful for yourself, very perspective. These are people who, they're people who maybe, they're very successful and then they get hit by cancer and then they have a food change, mind change. They decided if they survive the cancer, they're going to stop doing whatever it is they're doing and do what they really want to do with their life. And they, it's not often they can quit their job and move somewhere else and do something completely different and something that what they really, really want to do. They really dream of doing something that is really meaningful to themselves. Yeah. Then, when they are able to do that, they find a different kind of happiness. Yeah. It's not a happiness of essential purpose, it's a happiness of fulfillment. Happiness of having like, a life that is somehow complete. Yeah. That you are able to live according to something deep within you, something very important to you. In opposing to the Buddhist presentation, this is like living according to your deepest ethical principles. But you can also think of it as living according to what you really want to do with your life. So living a very purposeful and meaningful life. How it comes from good happiness. So this is the second level. You don't know what to do. Go on YouTube. YouTube. Who are all these YouTubers doing all sorts of things? Some people worry of their house and move into a van life, drive around, two cars and that kind of thing, watching all these YouTubers, driving around and trying to explain to you, or trying to share with you why they do that and what is their experience. Sometimes, but then there are people who go, not possible in Singapore, but in other countries, off-grid, to a house somewhere in the jungle or whatever, try out different kind of lifestyle. And those are not easy things. If you are going against culture, the prevalent culture, but people who really believe in it and really commit themselves to it and try to overcome all the challenges, they derive a kind of pleasure out of them. So meeting those challenges are trying to live according to certain principles that are very important to them. And out of that comes this second kind of happiness. What the Buddha said, happiness is blamelessness. You can think of it as the happiness of having no regret at the time of that. He said, oh, it's good that actually give it a try, try to do that, because that's what you need to ideally want to do. So it's a different quality of happiness. And the funny thing is, if you observe this people, their life is not necessarily easy. It's not populated by pleasant experiences. Quite often they are to endure a lot of unpleasant experiences. And yet, they're quite happy about it. I don't mean that their life is only unpleasant experiences. They are pleasant, they are also unpleasant experiences. But even if they have to go through unpleasant experiences, and they have to go through difficulties, hardships, but they enjoy their pleasures, simple pleasures are so much more. Because this is like almost like the fruit of their hard work and sacrifice. So, when you have this kind of happiness, you look down on the other kind of happiness. Happiness is just purely searching for chemical stimulation. So then, you'll find that it's quite easy for you to forego happiness of sensual pleasure, because you are committed to it and you are looking for different kinds of happiness. You don't mean much easier way to let go of it. You don't have to convince yourself they are bad, you're just not interested in them anymore. If there's something else that you are drawn to it. Now the third type, you know, this is my favorite, happiness is meditative attention. You don't have to go anywhere, go home, go on your cushion, you don't need to brave the weather, you don't need to climb rocks or mountains, you don't need to camp in the jungle and face the mosquitoes. In the privacy of your own meditation. Now, on your own meditation seat, you can experience a real kind of happiness. Happiness is meditative adoption. Far superior than others. And when you experience it, you get billion. Whether I have it or I don't have it, I'm not attached to it. Because now I have an inner source of happiness. So, by doing so, don't worry about being attached to that, you'll come to that. You lessen your attachment to other kinds of objects. Automatically, you are less interested in it, your mind becomes less continuous with them. You don't struggle so much with them, because you're not that interested in them. You no longer build all your hopes and expectations on sensual pleasures, because you have discovered for yourself in your own direct experience another source of bliss, another source of happiness, far superior. Okay? You understand the talking about? So that's why it's very good to meditate. So let's talk a little bit about the bliss of meditative instruction. And usually I try to tell people, don't worry about becoming attached to it. You worry about it when you experience it. Then you can worry about it. You haven't experienced it, there's no point worrying about it, isn't it? And also when you do experience it, you will understand that the way it works is quite different from sensual pleasures. Like with sensual pleasures, it's quite easy possible to become addicted to, become really attached to having those things. That is because sensual pleasures, as I mentioned earlier, the objects are very important. The actual object, the sight, sound, smell or really a certain kind of tactile content, so you depend on them to have those sensual pleasures. But the happiness of the bliss of meditative adoption is very good. It doesn't depend on all those, it doesn't depend on the stimulation of the object. What is the bliss of happiness? It derives not so much based on the object, but the breath. What's so interesting about the breath, right? Everybody has a different view out through the day, right? Whether you are meditating or not meditating. So where is the bliss come from? The bliss comes from the mind. It comes from how the mind functions in adoption. The mind in meditative adoption, deep concentration, what most people call it, function in a very different way from our day-to-day. It's almost as if the different parts of different aspects of the mind, different functions of the mind, come together and agree to work with one another. They don't fight with one another anymore. They all come back and they work harmoniously together. So, it's wonderful. It's like no struggle, and everything goes smoothly, and out of it comes I think it's kind of happening. I think it's kind of good. And that good is dependent not on the object, but on the meaning, driving the goal, driving the mind. It's very particular. No? If you leave your mind behind, you can pressure you in the direction. So it's always available. And once you become very good at it, if you want to learn to sit down and meditate, and there you are. You can even, when you're really good, you can meditate even in a very noisy environment, less than sacred, less than holy environment. No problem. This doesn't actually depend on the environment. When we are new, we are very sensitive to them. So we're less sensitized to sound, we're very concerned about what's going on around us. But when you're very good with meditation, all this time, suddenly, you're going to impact your practice so much. Okay? That's good, isn't it? Don't you attack it? It's not very difficult to experience the bliss of meditation. The good part, I think we're always repeating myself. Anyway, one is called rapture. Rapture is very exciting. That's the main intention. Rapture is very exciting. You don't need to wait 10 years or whatever to get it. You may even get it in this session. I'm very optimistic. You ought to be better than me. I'm a pessimist. If you're a pessimist, I think that you can do it. Of course you can do it. So rapture. I will say a little bit more. And there's kind of pleasure to come out of meditation. I normally translate as contentment. Rapture is very energetic. Almost like a lot of electricity, electric current. Experientially. So there are five types. One is called minor rapture, which is usually I call superficial. It means it's like, sometimes when you meditate, you can feel this buzzing feeling. Usually around 36 and some parts of your body. It's all very superficial. It's all along the skin. Some people even have this experience of like, you know, this hair standing on end. Not because of the cold blood, okay? There's something happening inside you and you find expression of it on the skin level. Right? So that is minor reaction. Second part is called flashlight rapture, which is like, sometimes I experience it as like two wires sort of get connected. There's a flow of electric current through your body. Very short. But before you realize it, it's gone. But something interesting is happening in your meditation. Today is a flashlight. That's the name of it. It's come and go like a flash. The third part is a bit more persistent. It's called a wave-like reaction. So, but it's the sensation that wave increases. Very forward. Not necessarily the entire body, maybe certain parts of your body. It's kind of an unusual sensation. It come and go, come and go. And the fourth one is called an uplifting reaction. This is when either the whole body or one part of the body feels very long, it's very wonderful feeling. Lightly, instead of feeling very weighed down, feeling wonderful sense of lightness and enlightenment. So that is an uplifting reaction. The fifth one, which led a very good meditator, is unlikely you have seen in this session, called pervasive reaction, which means some of these, all these different sensations, pervade the entire body and it stays. It's much, much stable, much, much stable. So those are the five things that the doctor did. Once you experience it, you'll be sick. Listen. Now that something is happening in my meditation, something unusual, finally arriving at it. Yes. Then, contrast to rapture, which is more exciting. In fact, some people likely say, if you have too much of rapture, you find a few types, a bit irritating. Not very peaceful. This is lots of things happening. It's very exciting at first. After a while, it's kind of a bit irritating. But the other part of belief is something contemplative. It's completely different quality. It's this sense of, that's what I call contentment. You feel very active, very kind of complete. You feel totally happy just watching the grass. Normally, we are afraid to do things like it's the most common thing. Ever imagine? Right, just watching the grass. Doing nothing else except in and out, and in and out. But when you explain contentment, you find that that is the most okay. Contented, wonderful. No need to run around, no need to look for this, no need to look for the new version of the game. Okay. Doing nothing, you just be here and just enjoy the moment, whatever it is. It could be just the grass, good old grass, So that is really a quality of pleasure. It's very rare because of the consumer society. If everybody is contented, the whole economy will collapse. Depends on the desire. It's the opposite. So it's actually quite rare in our modern society. But it's those moments where you feel totally happy and free. Just be here, whatever is experiencing. And then, example, maybe someone in the is, let's say, also not very appropriate to Singapore, in terms of experience. If you are very enthusiastic gardening, there are a lot of them. Because they are land rather than garden. And so I guess someone that attended some of my classes, she's really mad about the garden. All this gardening. In fact, she listened to my guided meditation tape while watching her son. I don't figure out how she meditates in that way, but anyway, you can imagine someone say, this is a bit old school, play the CD and listen to my guided meditation. Come back to you. They're watering plants, right? Okay. And she told me, oh, after she finished watering, there's a cup of tea, very English, still in the garden. And just continue listening to guided meditation, enjoying a cup of tea. See, you need to be creative with meditation. Yeah. And she said, but there's one issue. As a gardener, you see in your garden, so you work very hard, weeding and everything. You think that you will enjoy the garden. But the problem with someone who is a gardener is to cut down and to look at the garden and say, it's a weed. Do something about this. I should cut something back on. No, I'm talking about. That is the opposite of contentment. That is when you sit down in your beautiful garden, instead of enjoying it, you start thinking, what else I can do about it? Then you ask yourself, when are you ever going to enjoy your garden? Never, isn't it? It's never ending thing to do in the garden. But the opposite is if you can, you work hard and then come a time where you can just settle down and just enjoy, just be there and enjoy whatever it is, the flowers. You just have a very simple kind of pleasure being there. And that is the happiness of contentment. And you can experience that in the meditation. Even going to a garden, just meditate. It's a lot of work gardening, I can tell you. Bad versus me. No good for your back, no good for your knee. No good for your hip. The meditation work. Provide you sit on the chair. Yeah, okay, so those are the two types of pleasures that come out of meditation. When you have a taste of it, it help you to loosen the grip you have in other kinds of pleasures. It can be diversified by your mind. You open up and make your mind become aware of other things. Okay? So that sounds like we're going to do a meditation together. See whether you feel natural peace in this session. Don't be surprised. Just by the fact that I keep telling you, you may experience natural peace, you might actually get it. When I first started meditating, no one did this to me. No one did this. No one did this. Tell me that I can experience nature. They all tell me I cannot experience it unless I sit in a place for 10 years. So of course, I predicted I never experienced sleep. Because I don't expect myself to experience sleep. And then later, on my own, I decided that, so maybe, I can also have that experience. And once I had that idea in my head, I need to find that idea. I find it in my usually, I have nature. It's a very low standard. But still, it's still good. 那人一个就是也是一个这个是，但是原来的一个名字啊，but it's around about 2 years. Occasionally, maybe one shoulder relaxed, just one arm, actually, only one arm, never get beyond that one arm. It's very long, and very fluffy. This guy is a form of rupture. He proceeds to the rest of the body, that's too good. So, if you lower your standards, and you allow in your mind to proceed, you can also experience rupture. And how we can create the condition to facilitate this kind of pleasure in meditation. Personally, what I find helpful is to, well, usually I present these two steps. It's the second step, helping body and mind make transition, returning our attention to the body. If I spend more time on this second step, I don't need to be in a hurry to say, oh, I can start my proper meditation. I take a lot more time to settle my body. Just the body. By the rest of it, nothing exhausted. Just by paying more attention, come back and really just experience how the body is feeling. Not even relaxing the body, just connecting with the sensation of the body. And just by doing it, you actually help the body to begin a process. So that it's unwinding, you can putting aside all these systems. A lot of them have to do with stress, stress reaction in the body. And immediately, you feel better. And sometimes, you feel even better than better. You feel there's some kind of response that comes out in the body as well. And I think rupture, some rupture came from the release of holding of the body. The body is quite intense. Usually due to some kind of emotion and stress reaction, and then that tension releases. For a while, there is a kind of unusual sense of pleasure that comes back, and that is the kind of reaction. So let's do a meditation on guide you to see how we may elevate our experience of happiness and help us lessen our attachment to all the other senses and pleasures that come from sensory stimulation. So find a suitable posture for your body, one that doesn't cause you unnecessary pain, and that one that you feel you can comfortably remain in for about 30 or 25 minutes. Most important is to allow your back and spine to feel comfortable and upright. You need to deliberately tense up your back muscles to straighten your spine, but just allow the spine to be upright and relaxed naturally. Feel free to close your eyes completely if you want to. Rest your hands in such a way that allow your shoulders to be as relaxed as possible. Don't feel that you need to pull up your hands in any particular position. See if you can become aware of sensations of the sense of contact between your body and your feet, your body on the ground, in this posture. Allow your body to become aware that it is well supported in this posture. Your body is resting in something very solid and stable. You have to keep your body very balanced and safe. You are in a way sending a message to your body, to your brain, telling them that it's not okay, not alright to listen now, ready to be so kind, ready to be so calm. In your own time, there is tension, unnecessary tension, contraction. So the second step, helping our body and mind to make the transition into meditation. We are going to make use of our natural breath to come up. So first, if you can, depends where at the penetration of your own breath. So you don't have to focus on a particular spot in the body, but it can be better to continue to get very strong penetration of your own breath. You feel your skin and your muscle penetration, starting with the nostrils. You can see into the rhythm of the breath, breathing in, breathing out. Now let me know from the rhythm of the breath, the rhythm of the breath, to help us return our attention to our own body, to get in touch with the different bodily sensations. It is the spirit of the person to release, the body to be used and light up unnecessary construction circumstances. Thank you. We turn our attention to the body and back to the breath. Each time we breath in, we let in oxygen into our body. This breath can be an opportunity for us to come back to be in touch with our deepness, our body, and our breath, the sensation in our body. The breathing in is an opportunity to be in touch with your breath. Breathing in, as we follow the natural exhale, is an opportunity to release. Let us take out and release the power of our body. Let the other things, either or the second one, can also flow with our body. Tension, sadness, and not necessarily the body, but can be released. Or the emotion that comes into the mind. And related to the meditation, we do the same as a goal of the breath. To come back to the breath, we need to follow the rhythm of our natural breath, which can be long and short, and the flow of the breath. It doesn't matter. Just follow the rhythm of your own breath. And so we need to control something, we need to change it. Even when we are not here, we pay attention, take it in the time, half of the day. So that after this day, we begin a lot of sensation at the time. We need to look up and remind ourselves to do this. And this day, we are touch, we are ready. Sensation to the crown, the heart, and the lips. With the right touch, feel the unique sensation of the crown, of the inhale. Whether it is a tingling sensation, something warm or cooling, and the feeling of pressure, and maybe a little more, if it's completely gone. And then let's move on to the in-breath and place our attention to your forehead so that you're breathing your aware sensation to your forehead and the sensing of the muscles that are coming in from the body. And after taking it once again, you know your breath with it. We 应该是比较有的。就是呢，我觉得怎么去讲，就是一点，就是可能第一个要从最深刻的开始，然后就从最深刻的开始去，然后就对方，就是从一个月，从最深刻的开始，从最深刻的开始。怎么去知道这个人是怎么回事？就是说，因为什么原因，所以发生这个人和这样的一个人的关系有问题。就是每个人和我们不同的可能会有不同的需求，我们这个单词的词，这个词的发音，这个单词的发音，这个单词的发音，这个单词的发音，这个单词的发音。这个我平时没去看过，没去看过，是没去看过。一个人，一个人，他是我的一个，一个人，是一个安全的，一个人是一个安全的，一个人，这个人是一个安全的，你这个单词的 one of the sentence looking in touch with the sensation of the life within you. 那我们这个单词的单词，就是一个单词，一个单词是一个单词，对吧？对。你看，这个单词，我们这个单词，那个平常的单词，那个词的这个单词，这个单词的单词，这个单词。Only 16, and so the attention is a natural, within the touch and then with the right touch, within the touch, with a natural. So you can do the line to the left of the natural, and then try to the right to the left, and then the touch. Ya, nanti lagi di tempatan, 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 atau mungkin di tempat tempatan ini, adalah tempatan. Ya, nanti lagi.
Then you just have to do that.
study in the book. I don't know if the problem is these days, maybe our so-called education and accounting are not very high standard. You know what innovation is, innovation even in other cultures, when we reach a certain age, you go through a ceremony, like a graduation ceremony. Then in the more mystical tradition, they call initiation. You're initiated into the first set of experiences in life, and maybe you're transmitted into kind of knowledge. So what I mean about empowerment and initiation is that you get your first dose of meditative experiences during the ceremony itself. During the ceremony, you experience maybe a kind of altered state of consciousness, and experience something real that you taste, you experience it. And that initiate you into this realm of different kind of experiences. Then after that, in your daily practice, you're basically recreating and reinforcing and developing that sense that you receive during your empowerment and initiation. So I know by your initiation, open your eyes and say, oh, I didn't know this is possible for me. And now that you have that experience, then subsequently, every practice you keep going back to, you nurture, you develop it. You become more steady, you become stronger, you become too basic. Spiritual development. Apparently, it's because these days, initiation, you see it at the front, and the mind is not quite ready. So we go through the ceremony, maybe better. I think we're not in this lifetime. Not a woman discussed it, and I've been looking there, so I did board, and then when I did go home, and then I said, so passing around this special substances. I was referring to the Lama, and just trapping the substances, and going there, and coming here. The mind is just very distracted. So when it's very distracted, maybe I can confess, I don't feel I'm initiated at all. You know I'm distracted, I'm not concerned with all sorts of mundane things, maybe I'm just trying to get very judgmental, you say, oh, that person, they don't know what they're doing, you can tell like people, like, it's what we say, I've been to all over the place, I don't know how the teacher of the Lama is trying to help us to experience. So, you set kind of initiation experiences. It's not only really a formality, you go to a formality, but there is a true deep information. And therefore, because of people like me, that's why you may have a question that you are this person, empower or not empower, also the same. Yeah. Actually, it has to do with the power of secrecy. Because, secrecy is a very interesting thing. Psychologically, you will keep a secret. You really keep a secret, not just kind of like, you say, oh, I must keep a secret, but everybody knows your secret. It's not open secret. That is not true secret. But you do something genuinely in secret, whether for good or for bad. Secrecy has a profound impact on the mind. It's a little bit like an enclosure. You enclose the, you can't talk about it to other people. You cannot reveal it to other people. You all have to be kept in. You have tremendous power, and you nurture a lot of our meditation experiences. And allow it to go. Along the same line, so you start with the initiation, you get an initial taste of something different, new possibility. And then you practice it to nurture that experience. You practice it in secret. It's not like this day is going to be so much bigger that everybody knows that I'm up to this type of thing. Really, they're advertising to everybody. I'm on this trip. I'm going there. And then what we're doing is more people can say, so everybody around you know what you're doing. That is not true to say. But when you're able to keep joining people, as a student, then you have the power to nourish your experiences. And therefore, it can bring about a very powerful transformation of the mind. So that is the reason why there's a lot of emphasis on having a much of an arm, must speak people, must not reveal to uninitiated or unrelated people. So I think we all come together as a package to ensure that you have the best outcome from engaging with this practice. Not all of this practice has to be done. So it shows that it could create an unusual set of conditions that may facilitate social development. Yeah, it's the same word. The way it's one state and then two more. Yeah, it's very. Yeah. The way center is very different than the way center. I was trying to say, he studied Buddhist temple and he converted to Hindu temple. He said, oh, it's much easier. He was very profound experiences, yeah. But I think it's fair enough. You know, it's up to him to decide what he wants to do with his life, yeah. So Buddhist temple is well situated within the Buddhist philosophy and Buddhist practices, yeah. Okay. Alright, so come back to what we're talking about today. So we talk about pleasure, how to overcome, but actually the pleasure is not so much the pleasure themselves, but our attachment to the pleasure. And I briefly touch on one method is to acknowledge the gratification that comes out of our pleasure, but be able to see the drawback and the danger, especially when we become attached to it. And to get out the aspect is not so much about getting rid of the pleasure, but actually to let go of our attachment to the pleasure. This is one method that I mentioned. Another approach which what I prefer, and what I think looks better for me, is to recognize the different level, different kinds of pleasure, different kinds of happiness. And to see that the happiness of social pleasure, which is what we usually are more familiar with, more occupied with, you know, and over and above that, the happiness of that. Buddhism is blamelessness, and what I interpret as happiness of living a very meaningful, purposeful life, which actually requires you to have a very clear intention, what you want to do with your life. It doesn't mean that, I didn't do anything, so I didn't kill anybody, I didn't steal anything, I didn't involve in sex in the thing, because I didn't do anything. So that is not, of course, you didn't create anything negative. Yeah, in the sense blameless, but it's not really what you're talking about here. So those are considered like incidentally you just didn't do anything, it's really doing much. Whereas when you talk about happiness and blamelessness, if you live your life with a very clear intention, you're very clear about some of your important principles, and you try to live your life in line with those principles. And so I think a modern example is more commonly people who make a lot of changes, a lot of sacrifice, to live a life that for them is most meaningful, most purposeful. And in so doing, they actually may end up enduring a lot of hardships, a lot of challenges, and yet out of that they derive a different kind of happiness. They have pleasure, of course, to use it. But all and above that, there is a different kind of happiness. Happiness that comes from living a life that you are proud of. You may look back and say, no regret. No regret of having gone through all this suffering and all this trial, because it's really what I want to be. So that is happiness of blamelessness. And all about that is one balance, yeah? The happiness of meditative adoption. But in meditation itself, you can also come upon a very wholesome state of bliss, rapture, and contentment. Just because it comes from, not so much from the object, it comes from learning how to work with the mind, how the mind to function in a more harmoniously, in a more efficient way. Someone saw that you can't expect to be your own mind, you have something you can't remember. Instead, yeah, you're going together to accomplish whatever it is that you want to do, or whatever it is you want to focus on. And that harmony, in Sanskrit, the word for this harmony sometimes is called samadhi, the state of samadhi. In Hindi, this word is much more commonly used. Samadhi, sama means even, or equal, and di means to hold. So, if you put them together, samadhi means a very balanced state, a state of mind, what I call a very harmonious state of mind. A mind that seems to have no inner conflict, no fragmentation, and that whatever you place it on is actually engaged fully in it. In psychology, they still talk about state of flow, what they call flow. Flow is usually when you engage in an activity that you are very good at, you are very interested in, and you feel as if you completely absorb in that activity. And to the point where there's no, you no longer self-conscious. It's almost as if the activity happened by itself. This usually can happen in sport, in various kind of creative, artistic performances. Artists lost themselves in the painting, and sometimes people will say, as if the painting pain itself. There's no sense of self-doubt and self-consciousness, it's just sort of a flow of experience. Flow is a form of absorption. But I think meditative absorption is even more superior than flow experience. Flow experience are usually, how long can you, let's say you experience flow play, and how long can you play tennis, isn't it? Now, there's a limit, that's not to do with physical activity. There's a meditation, and you're really good at it, you can meditate 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours, better than 8 hours, then 5 hours, even in modern times. And then, of course, I don't recommend that. Your laundry will not be done, and all your other chores will not be done. Yeah. But it just shows that it is available. So we can experience another time, I think, of the month. And when we experience that, when we expand our repertoire, what is possible for ourselves, then we naturally have less attachment, less craving for sensual pleasure, because we now have alternatives. So that is an easy way of lessening attachment. Next week, I'll touch on pain, how to deal with the reaction to pain, and a few others. I will not finish all 8 even at this pace for so long. Okay? Thank you very much for your attention, and I hope you have a lot of pleasure. I'll see you around.